News Talk Breakfast. In association with AIR. Seamless connections with Ireland's number one broadband provider.
Good morning, Taoiseach Micheál Martin.
Good morning, Shane.
Thanks indeed for coming into us. Actually, just before we move on, that issue about antigen testing, there is a lot of criticism of NPHET's stance on this, and Tony Holland sceptical about the test. Other experts, we heard from that Harvard expert, we heard from Paul Moyne earlier on, saying we should be using them more widely. Are we being too cautious with the use of antigen tests?
I think my own view is we should use them more widely in society. That is my view. I fully accept that one can have a different opinion. It's very clear our public health authorities have mixed views about antigen testing and their impact and effectiveness. That said, you know, one of the big projects we have for the autumn is the return of third level education, for example. No, that would be significant numbers on campus. I do see a role there potentially for antigen testing in terms of picking up infection, level of infectiousness. Now, we would have a lot more people vaccinated by then, so we'll be in a stronger position. We have been using antigen testing in certain scenarios. Earlier, we were using them in hospital settings where there had been outbreaks earlier this year, and also in meat plants. But there was, Professor Ferguson did lead a study of this and an assessment of this. Yeah. It was a minority report, mainly from the public health side. So I can accept from a public perspective, that's not ideal.
No.
But it does reflect.
Are we being a little cautious? Are we being too cautious? That's the criticism.
Well, I think the issue really is around effectiveness and efficacy, and their view is in some settings, such as travel, for example, that PCR is a more robust test from a travel perspective. That would be the public health view. My own view is taking Professor Ferguson's report is there's potential to do more in other parts of society around the antigen testing, for example, where there could be significant local outbreaks.
Right.
We should experiment a bit more with antigen testing in certain settings.
Like with the Limerick School we've seen this week.
Yes, and it's not just international opinion. I mean, there's a lot of opinion around from fairly senior academic and scientific sources who would suggest that antigen testing can be effective in certain settings.
Okay. Can I ask you about another kind of story of the day? And this is the story, it first emerged about Sinn Féin canvassers impersonating pollsters. Then it emerged that Fine Gael had been doing it and Fianna Fáil had been doing it. Well, I think 2007, I think, is the latest your party has been doing it. Can you just bring us up to speed? What exactly was Fianna Fáil doing when it came to...
Well, my understanding is that from about prior to 2007, for a short number of years, the party members were used to supplement polling companies who oversaw polling exercises before 2007. That was a wrong practice issue, in my view, looking back. That shouldn't have happened.
It's deception, isn't it?
Well, when you go to a door and you don't say who you are,
that
is not right, and it's not proper, and shouldn't have happened.
Did party members, I mean, the accusation about Sinn Féin is that they actually had false ID and a false polling company. Did Fianna Fáil
That's not my understanding from what I've learned from party headquarters, that there wouldn't have been fake IDs or anything like that. But that the party members were used with polling companies at the time in terms of a lot of polling that was done prior to 2007. Since I've been leader, we've been using professional polling companies. I mean, political parties are not polling companies.
No.
Polling is a fairly... involved scientific methodology attached to it and so on, and it makes absolute sense, but also from a correct perspective in terms of being upfront with people on the doorstep.
Am I naive? Because I've been around watching politics for a long time. I'm a bit shocked by this story, that political parties would turn up at a doorstep and say we're carrying out a poll and they're actually and not identifying who they are. Am I naive to be shocked by that?
Well, not naive, but I mean, from our perspective, it was quite a significant time ago.
Yeah. Did it break the law?
I don't know whether it broke the law or not. There was no data recorded. I've been assured of that. No personal data in relation to the people at the door, you know, was taken or recorded. But it's not good practice at all.
Is it something that you in Fianna Fáil and the other parties need to look back on and find out exactly what happened and to see?
Well, we're doing that, yes. Yeah.
So
what I'm saying to you is what exactly I've been told.
Yeah.
I think
is there an investigation going on in Fianna Fáil?
Basically, there's not a comprehensive investigation going on. The practice happened. It was wrong. It shouldn't have happened. It's been dispensed with a long time ago. And we haven't been doing, you know, certainly haven't been doing much polling even professionally in recent times because of COVID. But yeah, in the last 10 years, it's all professional companies we use.
Okay. Boris Johnson and Joe Biden are due to meet today. I'm just reading Dennis Staunton in the Irish Times there. He's saying basically David Frost gave the Brexit minister gave two fingers to the EU, to Ireland and to the US yesterday. Is Britain negotiating, in your view, in good faith at the moment?
I think, first of all, the intervention from the Joe Biden's administration is significant, but also from my perspective, from what I've seen, represents a lot of common sense. It makes, from the American perspective, having alignment with countries of similar values and blocks of similar values. So the US-EU relationship is very important and restoring that transatlantic relationship. But equally, the UK need to be aligned to that restoration. So I think the UK or the US, the United States are saying, look, sort out this issue. We're very clear from the United States perspective that the Good Friday Agreement, the peace on the island is an absolute imperative and that the protocol is a contributor to that. And you've signed up to it, adhered to it. But also, I think making common sense suggestions as well. And an interesting point, which might get lost, the US are clearly saying to the United Kingdom government, look, if you agree an SPS type agreement, which is basically around the food and animals and so on, which would deal with 80% of the issues that are causing difficulties and challenges around the protocol, it will not negatively impact on your prospects for a UK-US trade deal. I think that's a very significant point.
Okay.
And I think if I would say to the United Kingdom government, and I've said this, that to me is a sensible way to proceed. And I think you need to take that on board, because that would have been a concern with the United Kingdom government, that if they signed up.
Sensible way to proceed. That might have been a message that might have found sort of willing ears in previous UK governments. Is it going to with this government? I'm to come back to my original question. Are they negotiating in good faith? Can you trust a deal that you would even do with the UK at the moment?
Well, I think the unilateralism around extending dates and so on has not been helpful. And the European Union has responded to that. That said, we had similar situations prior to the negotiation of Brexit itself. If you recall, we had the legislation and all of that. And ultimately, Sefcovic, the Commissioner Maros Sefcovic and David Frost knuckled down and actually signed off on the protocol and the withdrawal agreement and got a lot of stuff sorted in reasonably quick time. And that was after there had been a long period of no progress. On the more hopeful side, I think that can still happen.
Okay.
But it does need engagement from the British government side. And trust, I would agree with Maros Sefcovic, trust is the key ingredient in any such negotiations and discussions. And the pace of those discussions
can
has to
trust
increase
Boris
and improve. I think we can, ultimately, and we have to continue to engage. And we as a government are continuing in good faith with the United Kingdom government. And I met recently on this issue with Boris Johnson, and David Frost was in the room. And I think we put it across very clearly that from the overall perspective of relations on the island of Ireland and between Britain and Ireland, it makes sense that we resolve this issue in a sensible and constructive way.
Finally on this, Taoiseach, despite what reports said yesterday in Europe, are you absolutely confident there will be no checks on goods between Ireland and the EU?
Yes.
That's it.
I would dismiss that report right out of hand.
Okay, all right. Can I ask you to come back to COVID? I suppose it's a sign of progress that it's not the only issue we're talking about today. The vaccine rollout going well, obviously could be going better. I mean, there was hopes we'd have 400,000 a week. Tell us where we're at in terms of delivery of
Well,
vaccines.
I think it's going very well.
It wasn't meant as a criticism of the HZ, but the vaccines aren't coming through as much as we'd hoped.
Some of the supply issues we've had, and also some of the age restriction provisions that came in around AstraZeneca and around the Janssen.
Difficult situations,
vaccines,
absolutely.
Although the Janssen one is one that we didn't anticipate in terms of the US blockage on the Janssen vaccine in the manufacturing facility there, and has not been released yet. But I think we're in a good position. I think the target we're aiming for is by the end of July that we'd have, and this is a target dependent on supply, I have to stress that, that we'd have 70% fully vaccinated. And now the decision from NIAC to bring forward the AstraZeneca interval dosage period, you know, bring it forward to 8 weeks, HSE are working on that progressively, which will help us on that fully vaccinated side of the equation.
Okay.
That's in line with where Europe wants to be at the end of July.
Do we know when all of the adult population will be vaccinated at this stage?
We don't have exact timelines on that yet, but I think if you take the end of June is going to be a very good month. Again, the last 2 weeks of June is looking good in terms of security of supply from Pfizer-BioNTech.
Yeah.
In particular, the AstraZeneca visibility is also improving. I would have met with AstraZeneca last week on that issue. They've developed new capacities in Spain and Germany in terms of fill and finish. And so therefore, they're looking better than the perhaps they did earlier in the pandemic in terms of supplying and giving us visibility over that supply over the next number of weeks.
I suppose I'm thinking maybe of...
I mean, that's the two big issues for us, the two big vaccines at the moment. Pfizer-BioNTech is the workhorse. Moderna is doing fine and fulfilling its obligations. Yeah. Now AstraZeneca coming a bit stronger.
Right.
And the Janssen is not at all clear at this stage.
Okay. I suppose I'm thinking of the kids doing the leave insert and a lot of them will be going on to third level in late September. Will they be vaccinated by then?
We would be moving to vaccinate. Well, sorry, but in terms of third level students, we would hope to have them vaccinated before the academic year commences.
Okay.
But we will now then have to turn our attention to under 18s, under 16s in respect to different vaccines.
That's a trickier issue, is it?
Well, NIAC are looking at that at the moment. There's some vaccines have already received authorization on that front. Europe is very clear that we will be vaccinating teenagers. That's the European position going into 2022. And to that end, Europe has ordered and pre-purchased now large doses of vaccines for 2022 and 2023. They've entered into contracts with Pfizer's. We'll be doing so also with other RNA producers and protein-based vaccines, not just for teenagers and children across Europe, but also to deal with the variants, because the variants of concern still are an issue out there. The RNA vaccines can adjust and change quickly and can be adapted quickly to deal with variants that might emerge.
Okay.
And so there's a lot of good preparatory work being done by Brussels now and by the Commission on this front. They set up a group called the HERA Group, which is a combination of manufacturers, biotech companies, the Commission, researchers, to get ahead of it now in terms of variants that might come our way, so that habitually in time we could be getting booster vaccines to top up what we've already received in terms of our immunity. And I think that's Europe is in a better shape perhaps than it was prior to the pandemic.
Okay. Will we all be back in work in August? Is that still your view? Or a lot of us be back a lot of days in August?
Well, can I just put one note of warning and concern is the Indian variant and what's happening in the United Kingdom. And we did say we're going to keep a close eye on that, and we are keeping a close eye on that. I think for the summer, outdoors is best. But yes, in terms of other areas of the economy and society, such as return to the workplace, ideally we would like to see a phased return. Particularly in the latter half of August. But we'll take it, it's now early June.
Yeah.
Every month, as you know, towards the end of the month, we take a check on this.
Oh, yeah, terms and conditions and apply,
see,
yeah.
And see what's possible for July, what's possible for August. We were able to do more in June than we had anticipated in early May, and likewise for July. So we're making good progress. I mean, the hospitalizations this morning, 77 in hospital, 27 in ICU. So far, so good. Now, there is a bank holiday effect in terms of the numbers, you know, that the last 2 days have been two good days in terms of number of cases.
Yeah.
That'll probably increase towards the end of the week. But we are just watching the British situation and the fact that one is looking at higher hospitalizations now in Britain. And in particular geographies in Britain, the numbers are going up, so we're keeping a very close eye on that.
You say outdoor is best, not if you're in South William Street on a Saturday night in Dublin. Have you planned enough for that kind of outdoor is best summer?
Well, when I say outdoors is best, it's best for the vaccine. Sorry, it's best for the virus and protecting oneself against getting the virus. Indoors is a much more difficult environment and does facilitate the spread of the virus.
Yeah.
Of that there is no doubt.
Have you planned enough?
So what I'm saying is we should use the good
outdoors.
Weather, we should use the better weather of our summer for that end and towards that end and towards that purpose. I think I think some local authorities are planning very well, and I think we can do better. That said, I think the opening of outdoor dining and outdoor hospitality more generally will facilitate that, I think, in the coming weeks. I went out last night, I was out with Deirdre Conroy, walking from Camden Street up Rat Mines to Ranelagh. It was a wonderful atmosphere. People were very relaxed, eating out, having a few drinks. Very pleasant experience. No, a beautiful evening.
Yeah.
And I think we can get into that groove as we progress. And I think that's probably the norm of what we will see. We've got to watch the weekends and large gatherings and that. I was in Cork on Tuesday. Some very innovative initiatives there in terms of the umbrellas on Prince's
Street. Yeah, Cork seems to be leading the way in that.
Well, the pedestrianised 18 streets.
Yeah.
So I can recall when I was a councillor, it would take years to pedestrianise one street. And they've moved with COVID and said, let's transform this. Let's use the streets really in a structured way to facilitate people eating out.
More to do there though in terms of...
Absolutely more to do, yeah.
Two quick issues before we let you go, Taoiseach. Interesting report on housing in the papers today. Young people now living at home until 28. Back in 2008 it was age 25 they were leaving home. And it's also the same in terms of first time buyer. Was 31 in 2008, now 34. 3 years, Brian Hayes estimates, before demand meets supply. That's a kind of a serious indictment on the government, on the political system, in terms of delivering what people want in terms of homes.
Yeah, well, this government is close to 1 year in office now. We've had to deal with a global pandemic. Progress has been made in housing in previous years, but we need to do far more. And government is possessed of this issue. There will be a new strategy developed by the Minister, Dara O'Brien, in terms of a Housing for All strategy. To me, it is the number one issue in society. We've got to get back the capacity for young people to be able to afford to buy houses. We've got to get more social houses built. The big challenge is supply and delivery. And what I mean by delivery is the capacity to get far more houses built on an annual basis. So we have to reach targets of up to 33,000 per annum to meet the demand that has been identified by ESRI and others in respect of what will be needed. It may even be higher than that. Mm.
Are the ESRI right when they say you should double the amount of money you're spending on public housing?
But I think we need to increase spending, but I think it's more around delivery. I mean, we have lots and lots of zoned land, for example, that's not being used for the purposes that it was zoned for, namely housing. And so a lot of this is to do with delivery as well as additional resources. We're now spending about $3.3 billion in the housing budget between capital and current this year. That's up very substantially from the last, say, if you took 4 years ago. But in my view, the implications of not meeting this challenge, first of all, it's on the individual level, on young people that you are talking about, who do need to be in a position to be able to afford housing.
Yeah.
And so we have to...
And move out of home before they're 28.
Out of home. Yes, yes. And also, there's a number of initiatives from the cost
for
rental scheme.
Yeah.
The cost rental is good, 25% before lower market value, but we've got to get that going at a national level. It'll be about 500 units at the end of the year. More affordable initiatives and affordable legislation is going through now. So that's directly the state getting involved in building affordable housing and also the shared equity scheme. And then a massive program of social housing that we need to build ourselves to provide and take pressure off the private market and give people an opportunity to get houses. But we're nowhere near the level we should be in terms of, and COVID has impacted us on the first 3 months of this year. We had to shut down construction. That didn't help. But, you know, the government is possessed of it collectively. And we want to get it, you know, I see it as critical.
Number
for the
one issue, Leo Varadkar doesn't necessarily agree.
To me, it's clearly from a social perspective. For young people themselves and people more generally, and for children, need to grow up.
Is it what you'll be judged on as a government, do you think, in 4 years' time?
Well,
the election?
It will be, but it's not just about that.
It's
about a proper quality of life in society. Yeah. It's what we should aspire to as a society. And also, you know, I believe that as a country, we're anchored in communities. We're good at communities. We're good at a sense of identity in our parish and so on. That all stemmed from people having their homes, people living in locality for a prolonged period of time, delivering that loyalty and commitment to areas and so on. And housing is actually a part of that societal sort of build-up.
All right.
But also then economically, if we want to continue to attract foreign direct investment into this country, we need proper and housing and so on.
Taoiseach, just before I let you go, you spoke very, very eloquently in an interview in the Irish Times the bereavements that your family went through. Look, I know it's a very private matter and I don't want to intrude in any any way, but I think the interview touched a lot of people. Have you had much reaction from talking to people? I know you've been out canvassing in Dublin, you've been out in Cork. Has there been a big reaction to you on this?
Well, I didn't expect a reaction, perhaps in advance of, and I think Jen Hogan from the Irish Times, the context was very much a series on parenting.
On parenting, and I know you spoke about it in that context.
And that was the context, yeah. And got a lot of emails from people who've gone through similar experiences, which was at least the sense was that they benefited from the interview, and it resonated with quite a number of people in similar situations.
You know? Yeah, so. I think it did resonate with a lot of people. Yeah. Well, look, thank you indeed for coming into us, Taoiseach Micheál Martin.
Thank you very much indeed, Shane. Thank you.